to, I cannot kiss him a third. Instead, we gaze out over the sea, at the moonlight on the water, at the drops of rain on the windscreen reflecting back the yellow glow from the headlights of passing cars. Just the two of us, holding hands, together. We sit there for what feels like hours. Ben is beside me, staring out to sea. He scans the water, as if looking for something, some answer in the dark, and he doesn't speak. I wonder why he has brought us here, what he is hoping to find. Is it really our anniversary? I say. There is no answer. He doesn't appear to have heard me, and so I say it again. Yes, he replies softly. Our wedding anniversary. No, he says. It's the anniversary of the night we met. I want to ask him whether we are supposed to be celebrating, and to tell him that it doesn't feel like a celebration, but it seems cruel. The busy road behind us has quietened. The moon is rising high in the sky. I begin to worry that we will stay out all night, looking at the sea while the rain falls around us. I affect a yawn. I'm sleepy, I say. Can we go to our hotel? He looks at his watch. Yes, he says, of course. Sorry. Yes. He starts the car. We'll go there right now. I am relieved. I am both craving sleep and dreading it. The coast road dips and rises as we skirt the edges of a village. The lights of another, larger town begin to draw nearer, tightening into focus through the damp glass. The road becomes busier. A marina appears with its moored boats and shops and nightclubs. And then we're in the town itself. On our right, every building seems to be a hotel, advertising vacancies on white signs that blow in the wind. The streets are busy. It is not as late as I thought, or else this is the kind of town which is alive night and day. I look out to sea. A pier juts into the water, flooded with light and with an amusement park at its end. I can see a domed pavilion, a roller coaster, a helter-skelter. I can almost hear the whoops and cries of the riders as they are spun above the pitch-black sea. An anxiety I cannot name begins to form in my chest. Where are we? I say. There are words over the entrance to the pier, picked out in bright white lights, but I can't make them out through the rain-washed windscreen. We're here, says Ben, as we turn up a side street and stop outside a terraced house. There is lettering on the canopy over the door. Rialto Guest House, it says. There are steps up to the front door, an ornate fence separating the building from the road. Beside the door is a small cracked pot that would once have held a shrub, but is now empty. I am gripped with an intense fear. Have we been here before? I say. He shakes his head. You're sure? It looks familiar. I'm certain, he says. We might have stayed somewhere near here once. You're probably remembering that. I try to relax. We get out of the car. There is a bar next to the guest house, and through its large windows I can see throngs of drinkers and a dance floor, pulsing at the back. Music thuds, muffled by the glass. We'll check in and then I'll come back for the luggage, okay? I pull my coat tight around me. The wind is cold now, and the rain heavy. I rush up the steps and open the front door. There is a sign taped to the glass. No vacancies. I go through and into the lobby. You've booked, I say when Ben joins me. We're standing in a hallway. Further down, a door is ajar, and from it comes the sound of a television, its volume turned up, competing with the music next door. There is no reception desk, but instead a bell sits on a small table, a sign next to it inviting us to ring it to attract attention. Yes, of course, says Ben. Don't worry. He rings the bell. For a moment, nothing happens. And then a young man comes from a room somewhere at the back of the house. He is tall and awkward, and I notice that, despite it being far too big for his frame, his shirt is untucked. He greets us as though he was expecting us, though not warmly, and I wait while he and Ben complete the formalities. It is clear the hotel has seen better days. The carpet is threadbare in places, and the paintwork around the doorways scuffed and marked. Opposite the lounge is another door marked dining room, and at the back are several more doors through which I imagine one would find the kitchen and private rooms of the staff. "I'll take you to the room now, shall I?" says the tall man, when he and Ben have finished. I realize he's talking to me. Ben is on his way back outside, presumably to get the bags. "Yes," I say. "Thank you." He hands me a key and we go up the stairs. On the first landing are several bedrooms, but we walk past them and up another flight. The house seems to shrink as we go higher. The ceilings are lower, the walls closer. We pass another bedroom and then stand at the bottom of a final flight of stairs that must lead to the very top of the house. "Your room is up there," he says. "It's the only one." I thank him, and then he turns and goes back downstairs, and I climb to our room. I open the door. The room is dark, and bigger than I was expecting up here at the top of the house. I can see a window opposite, and through it a dim grey light is shining, picking out the outline of a dressing table, a bed, a table, and an armchair. The music from the club next door thuds, stripped of its clarity, reduced to a dull, crunching bass. I stand still. Fear has gripped me again. The same fear that I experienced outside the guest house, but worse somehow. I go cold. Something is wrong, but I can't say what. I breathe deeply, but can't get enough air into my lungs. I feel as if I am about to drown. I close my eyes, as if hoping the room will look different when I open them, but it doesn't. I am filled with an overwhelming terror of what will happen when I switch on the light. As if that simple action will spell disaster, the end of everything. What will happen if I leave the room shrouded in blackness and instead go back downstairs? I could walk calmly past the tall man, and along the corridor, past Ben if necessary, and out of the hotel. But they would think I had gone mad, of course. They would find me and bring me back. And what would I tell them? That the woman who remembers nothing had a feeling she didn't like? An inkling? They would think me ridiculous. I am with my husband. I have come here to be reconciled with him. I am safe with Ben. And so I switch on the light. There is a flash as my eyes adjust, and then I see the room. It is unimpressive. There is nothing to be frightened of. The carpet is a mushroom grey. The curtains and wallpaper both in a floral pattern, though they don't match. The dresser is battered, with three mirrors on it, and a faded painting of a bird above it. The armchair wicker with yet another floral pattern on the cushion, and the bed covered with an orange bedspread in a diamond design. I can see how disappointing it would be to someone who had booked it for their holiday, but though Ben has booked it for hours, it is not disappointment that I feel. The fear has burnt itself down to dread. I close the door behind me and try to calm myself. I am being stupid. Paranoid. I must keep busy. Do something. It feels cold in the room, and a slight draft wafts the curtains. The window is open and I go over to close it. I look out before I do. We are high up. The street lamps are far below us. Seagulls sit silently upon them. I look out across the rooftops, see the cool moon hanging in the sky, and in the distance the sea. I can make out the pier, the helter-skelter, the flashing lights. And then I see them, the words, over the entrance to the pier. Brighton Pier. Despite the cold, and even though I shiver, I feel a bead of sweat form on my brow. Now it makes sense. Ben has brought me here, to Brighton, to the place of my disaster. But why? Does he think I am more likely to remember what happened if I am back in the town in which my life was ripped from me? Does he think that I will remember who did this to me? I remember reading that Dr. Nash had once suggested I come here, and I had told him no. There are footsteps on the stairs, voices. The tall man must be bringing Ben here, to our room. They will be carrying the luggage together. They will be carrying the luggage together, lifting it up the stairs and round the tricky landings. He will be here soon. What should I tell him? That he is wrong and being here will not help? That I want to go home? I go back towards the door. I will help to bring the bags through, and then I will unpack them, and we will sleep, and then tomorrow... It hits me. Tomorrow I will know nothing again. That must be what Ben has in his satchel, photographs, the scrapbook. He will have to use everything he has to explain who he is and where we are all over again. I wonder if I brought my journal, then remember packing it, putting it in my bag. I try to calm myself. Tonight I will put it under the pillow and tomorrow I will find it and read it. Everything will be fine. I can hear Ben on the landing. He is talking to the tall man, discussing arrangements for breakfast. We'd probably like it in our room, I hear him say. A gull cries outside the window, startling me. I go towards the door and then I see it. To my right, a bathroom, with the door open. A bath, a toilet, a basin. But it is the floor that draws me, fills me with horror. It is tiled, and the pattern is unusual. Black and white alternate in crazed diagonals. My jaw opens. I feel myself go cold. I think I hear myself cry out. I know then. I recognize the pattern. It is not only Brighton that I have recognized. I have been here before, in this room. The door opens. I say nothing as Ben comes in, but my mind spins. Is this the room in which I was attacked? Why didn't he tell me we were coming here? How can he go from not even wanting to tell me about the assault to bringing me to the room in which it happened? I can see the tall man standing just outside the door, and I want to call out to him, to ask him to stay, but he turns to leave and Ben closes the door. It is just the two of us now. He looks at me. Are you all right, love? He says. I nod and say yes, but the word feels as though it has been forced out of me. I feel the stirrings of hate in my stomach. He takes my arm. He is squeezing the flesh just a little too tightly. Any more and I would say something. Any less and I doubt that I would notice. You're sure? Yes, I say. Why is he doing this? He must know where we are, what this means. All along he must have been planning this. Yes, I'm fine. I just feel a little tired. And then it hits me. Dr. Nash, he must have something to do with this. Otherwise, why would Ben, after all these years when he could have but did not, decide to bring me here now? They must have been in contact. Perhaps Ben called him after I told him all about our meetings. Perhaps sometime during the last week, the week I know nothing about. They planned it all. Why don't you lie down? Says Ben. I hear myself speak. I think I will. I turn towards the bed. Perhaps they've been in touch all along. Dr. Nash might have been lying about everything. I pictured him, dialing Ben after he'd said goodbye to me, telling him about my progress or lack of it. Good girl, says Ben. I meant to bring champagne. I think I'll go and get some. There's a shop, I think. It's not far. He smiles. Then I'll join you. I turn to face him and he kisses me. Now, here, his kiss lingers. He brushes my lips with his, puts his hand in my hair, strokes my back. I fight the urge to pull away. His hand moves lower, down my back, coming to rest on the top of my buttock. I swallow hard. I cannot trust anybody. Not my husband. Not the man who is claimed to be helping me. They have been working together, building to this day, the day when, clearly, they have decided I am to face the horror in my past. How dare they, I think. How dare they? Okay, I say. I turn my head away slightly, push him gently so that he lets me go. He turns and leaves the room. I'll just lock the door, he says, as he closes it behind him. You can't be too careful. I hear the key turn in the door outside, and I begin to panic. Is he really going to buy champagne? Or is he meeting Dr. Nash? I cannot believe he has brought me to this room without telling me. Another lie to go with all the others. I hear him go down the stairs. Wringing my hands, I sit on the edge of the bed. I cannot calm my mind, cannot settle on just one thought. Instead, thoughts race, as if in a mind devoid of memory, each idea has too much space to grow and move, to collide with others in a shower of sparks before spinning off into its own distance. I stand up. I feel enraged. I cannot face the thought of him coming back, pouring champagne, getting into bed with me. Neither can I face the thought of his skin next to mine, or his hands on me in the night, pouring at me, pressing me, encouraging me to give myself to him. How can I, when there is no me to give? I would do anything, I think. Anything except for that. I cannot stay here, in this place where my life was ruined and everything taken away from me. I try to work out how much time I have. 10 minutes? 5? I go over to Ben's bag and open it. I don't know why. I'm not thinking of why, or how, only that I must move, while Ben is away, before he returns and things change again. Perhaps I intend to find the car keys, to force the door and go downstairs, out into the rainy street, to the car. Although I'm not even certain I can drive, perhaps I mean to try, to get in, and go far, far away. Or perhaps I mean to find a picture of Adam. I know they're in there. I will take just one. And then I will leave the room and run. I will run and run. And then, when I can run no more, I will call Claire, or anybody, and I will tell them that I cannot take it any more, and beg them to help me. I dig my hands deep in the bag. I feel metal and plastic, something soft, and then an envelope. I take it out, thinking it might contain photographs, and see that it is the one I found in the office at home. I must have put it in Ben's bag as I packed, intending to remind him it had not been opened. I turn it over and see that the word private has been written on the front. Without thinking, I tear it open and remove its contents. Paper, pages and pages. I recognize it. The faint blue lines, the red margins. These pages are the same as those in my journal, in the book that I have been writing. And then I see my own handwriting and begin to understand. I have not read all of my story. There is more. Pages and pages more. I find my journal in my bag. I had not noticed before, but after the final page of writing, a whole section has been removed. The pages have been excised neatly, cut with a scalpel or a razor blade, close to the spine. Cut out by Ben. I sit on the floor. The pages spread in front of me. This is the missing week of my life. I read the rest of my story. The first entry is dated. Friday, 23rd of November, it says. The same day I met Claire. I must have written it that evening, after speaking to Ben. Perhaps we had had the conversation I was anticipating, after all. I sit here. It begins. On the floor of the bathroom, in the house in which supposedly I woke up every morning, I have this journal in front of me, this pen in my hand. I write because it's all I can think of to do. Tissues are balled around me, soaked with tears and blood. When I blink, my vision turns red. Blood drips into my eye as fast as I can wipe it away. When I looked in the mirror, I could see that the skin above my eyes cut, and my lip too. When I swallow, I taste the metallic tang of blood. I want to sleep, to find a safe place somewhere, and close my eyes, and rest, like an animal. That is what I am, an animal, living from moment to moment, day to day, trying to make sense of the world in which I find myself. My heart races, I read back over the paragraph, my eyes drawn again and again to the word blood. What had happened? I begin to read quickly, my mind stumbling over words, lurching from line to line. I don't know when Ben will get back and can't risk him taking these pages before I have read them. Now may be my only chance. I decided it was best to speak to him after dinner. We ate in the lounge. Sausage, mash, our plates balanced on our knees. And when we had both finished, I asked if he would turn the television off. He seemed reluctant. "I need to talk to you," I said. The room felt too quiet, filled only with the ticking of the clock and the distant hum of the city, and my voice sounding hollow and empty. "Darling," said Ben, putting his plate on the coffee table between us. A half-chewed lump of meat sat on the side of the plate. Peas floated in the thin gravy. "Is everything okay?" "Yes," I said. "Everything's fine." I didn't know how to continue. He looked at me, his eyes wide, waiting. "You do love me, don't you?" I said. I felt almost as if I was gathering evidence, insuring myself against any later disapproval. "Yes," he said. "Of course. What's this about? What's wrong?" "Ben," I said, "I love you too. And I understand your reasons for doing what you've been doing, but I know you've been lying to me." Almost as soon as I finished the sentence, I regretted starting it. I saw him flinch. He looked at me, his lips pulled back as if to speak, his eyes wounded. "What do you mean?" he said. "Darling," I had to continue now. There was no way out of the stream into which I had begun to wade. "I know you've been doing it to protect me, not telling me things, but it can't go on. I need to know." "What do you mean?" he said. "I haven't been lying to you." I felt a surge of anger. "Ben," I said, "I know about Adam." His face changed then. I saw him swallow and look away, towards the corner of the room. He brushed something off the arm of his pullover. "What?" "Adam," I said. "I know we had a son." I half expected him to ask me how I knew, but then realized this conversation was not unusual. "We have been here before, on the day I saw my novel, and other days when I have remembered Adam too." I saw he was about to speak, but didn't want to hear any more lies. "I know he died in Afghanistan," I said. His mouth shut, then opened again almost comically. "How do you know that?" "You told me," I said, "weeks ago. You were eating a biscuit and I was in the bathroom. I came downstairs and told you that I'd remembered we'd had a son, even remembered what he was called. And then we sat down and you told me how he'd been killed. You showed me some photographs from upstairs, photos of me and him, and letters that he'd written, a letter to Santa Claus." Grief washed over me again. I stopped talking. Ben was staring at me. "You remembered? How?" "I've been writing things down, for a few weeks, as much as I can remember." "Where?" he said. He had begun to raise his voice, as if in anger, though I didn't understand what he might be angry about. "Where have you been writing things down? I don't understand, Christine. Where have you been writing things down?"
"I've been keeping a notebook."
"A notebook?" The way he said it made it sound so trivial, as if I'd been using it to write shopping lists and record phone numbers. "A journal," I said. He shifted forward in his chair as if he was about to get up. "A journal? For how long?"
"I don't know exactly, a couple of weeks."
"Can I see it?" I felt petulant and angry. I was determined not to show it to him. No, I said, not yet. He was furious. Where is it? Show it to me. Ben, it's personal. He shot the word back at me. Personal? What do you mean, personal? I mean, it's private. I wouldn't feel comfortable with you reading it. Why not? He said. Have you written about me? Of course I have. What have you written? What have you said? How to answer that? I thought of all the ways I had betrayed him, the things I have said to Dr. Nash, and thought about him. The ways in which I have distrusted my husband, the things I have thought him capable of. I thought of the lies I have told, the days I have seen Dr. Nash and Claire, and told him nothing. Lots of things, Ben. I've written lots of things. But why? Why have you been writing things down? I could not believe he had to ask me that question. I want to make sense of my life, I said. I want to be able to link one day to the next, like you can, like anybody can. But why? Are you unhappy? Don't you love me any more? Don't you want to be with me, here? The question threw me. Why did he feel that wanting to make sense of my fractured life meant that I wanted to change it in some way? I don't know, I said. What is happiness? I'm happy when I wake up, I think. Though if this morning is anything to go by, I'm confused. But I'm not happy when I look in the mirror and see that I'm 20 years older than I was expecting, that I have grey hairs and lines around my eyes. I'm not happy when I realize that all those years have been lost, taken from me. So I suppose a lot of the time I'm not happy, no. But it's not your fault. I'm happy with you. I love you. I need you. He came and sat next to me then. His voice softened. I'm sorry, he said. I hate the fact that everything was ruined, just because of that car accident. I felt anger rise in me again, but clamped it down. I had no right to be angry with him. He did not know what I had learned and what I hadn't. Ben, I said, I know what happened. I know it wasn't a car accident. I know I was attacked. He didn't move. He looked at me, his eyes expressionless. I thought he hadn't heard me, and then he said, What attack? I raised my voice. Ben, I said, stop it! I couldn't help it. I had told him I was keeping a journal, told him I was piecing together the details of my story, and yet here he was, still prepared to lie to me when it was obvious I knew the truth. Don't keep fucking lying to me. I know there was no car accident. I know what happened to me. There's no point in trying to pretend it was anything other than it was. Denying it doesn't get us anywhere. You have to stop lying to me. He stood up. He looked huge, looming over me, blocking my vision. Who told you? He said. Who? Was it that bitch, Claire? Did she go shooting her ugly fat mouth off, telling you lies? Sticking her oar in where it isn't wanted? Ben, I began, she's always hated me. She'd do anything to poison you against me, anything. She's lying, my darling, she's lying. It wasn't Claire, I said. I bowed my head. It was somebody else. Who? He shouted. Who? I've been seeing a doctor, I whispered. We've been talking. He told me. He was perfectly motionless, apart from the thumb of his right hand, which was tracing slow circles on the knuckle of his left. I could feel the warmth of his body, hear the slow drawing in of his breath, the hold, the release. When he spoke, his voice was so low, I struggled to make out the words. What do you mean, a doctor? His name is Dr. Nash. Apparently he contacted me a few weeks ago. Even as I said it, it felt like I wasn't telling my own story, but that of someone else. Saying what? I tried to remember. Had I written about our first conversation? I don't know, I said. I don't think I wrote down what he said. And he encouraged you to write things down? Yes. Why? He said. I want to get better, Ben. And is it working? What have you been doing? Has he been giving you drugs? No, I said. We've been doing some tests, some exercises. I had a scan. The thumbs stopped moving. He turned to face me. A scan? His voice was louder again. Yes, an MRI. He said it might help. They didn't really have them when I was first ill, or they weren't as sophisticated as they are now. Where have you been doing these tests? Tell me!
I was starting to feel confused. In his office, I said, in London. The scan was there too, I don't remember exactly.
How have you been getting there? How did someone like you get to a doctor's office?
His voice was pinched and urgent now.
How?
I tried to speak calmly. He's been collecting me from here, I said, and driving me. Disappointment flashed on his face, and then anger. I had never wanted the conversation to go like this, never intended it to become difficult. I needed to try and explain things to him.
Ben, I began.
What happened next was not what I was expecting. A dull moan began in Ben's throat, somewhere deep. It built quickly until, unable to hold it any more, he let out a terrible screech, like nails on glass.
Ben, I said, what's wrong?
He turned around, staggering as he did so, averting his face from me. I worried he was having some kind of attack. I stood up and put my hand out for him to hold on to.
Ben,
I said, but he ignored it, steadying himself against the wall. When he turned back to me, his face was bright red, his eyes wide. I could see that spittle had gathered at the corners of his mouth. It looked as though he had put on some kind of grotesque mask. So distorted were his features.
You stupid fucking bitch, he said, moving up against me as he did so. I flinched. His face was just inches from mine. How long has this been going on?
Tell me,
you slut. How long?
Nothing's going on, I said. Fear welled within me, rising up. It did a slow roll on the surface and then sank beneath.
Nothing, I said again.
I could smell the food on his breath, meat and onion. Spittle flew, striking me in the face, the lips. I could taste his warm, wet anger.
You're sleeping with him. Don't lie to me.
The backs of my legs pressed against the edge of the sofa, and I tried to move along it, to get away from him. But he grabbed my shoulders and shook them.
You've always been the same, he said, a stupid lying bitch. I don't know what made me think you'd be any different with me. What have you been doing, eh? Sneaking off while I've been at work? Or have you been having him round here? Or maybe you've been doing it in a car, parked up on the heath?
I felt his hands grip tight, his fingers and his nails digging into my skin, even through the cotton of my blouse.
You're hurting me, I shouted, hoping to shock him out of his rage. Ben, stop it!
He stopped shaking and loosened his grip a fraction. It didn't seem possible that the man gripping my shoulders, his face a mixture of rage and hate, could be the same man who had written the letter that Claire had given me. How could we have reached this level of distrust? How much miscommunication must it have taken to bring us from there to here?
I'm not sleeping with him, I said. He's helping me. Helping me to get better so that I can live a normal life. Here, with you. Don't you want that?
His eyes began darting around the room.
Ben, I said again, talk to me.
He froze. Don't you want me to get better? Isn't that what you've always wanted, always hoped for? He began to shake his head, rocking it from side to side. I know it is, I said. I know it's what you've wanted all this time. Hot tears ran down my cheeks, but I spoke through them, my voice fracturing into sobs. He was still holding me, but gently now, and I put my hands on his. I met Claire, I said. She gave me your letter. I've read it, Ben. After all these years, I've read it. There is a stain there, on the page. Ink, mixed with water in a smudge that resembles a star. I must have been crying as I wrote. I carried on reading. I don't know what I expected to happen. Perhaps I thought he'd fall into my arms, sobbing with relief, and we would stand there, holding each other silently for as long as it took with water in a smudge that resembles a star. I must have been crying as I wrote. I carried on reading. I don't know what I expected to happen.
Perhaps I thought he'd fall into my arms, sobbing with relief, and we would stand there, holding each other silently for as long as it took for us to relax, to feel our way back into each other again. And then we would sit and talk things through. Perhaps I would go upstairs and get the letter that Claire had given me, and we would read it together, and begin the slow process of rebuilding our lives on a foundation of truth. Instead, there was an instant in which nothing at all seemed to move, and everything was quiet. There was no sound of breathing, no traffic from the road. I didn't even hear the ticking of the clock. It was as if life was suspended, hovering on the cusp between one state and another. And then it was over. Ben drew away from me. I thought he was going to kiss me, but instead I was aware of a blur out of the corner of my eye, and my head cracked to one side. Pain radiated from my jaw. I fell, the sofa coming towards me, and the back of my head connected with something hard and sharp. I cried out. There was another blow, and then another. I closed my eyes, waiting for the next. But nothing came. Instead, I heard footsteps moving away, and a door slamming. I opened my eyes and inhaled in an angry gasp. The carpet stretched away from me, now vertical. A smashed plate sat near to my head and gravy oozed onto the floor, soaking into the carpet. Green peas had been trodden into the weave of the rug and the half-chewed sausage. The front door swung open, then slammed. Footsteps on the path. Ben had left. I exhaled. I closed my eyes. I must not sleep, I thought. I must not. I opened them again. Dark swells in the distance and the smell of flesh. I swallowed and tasted blood. What have I done? What have I done? I made sure he was gone, then came upstairs and found my journal. Blood dripped onto the carpet from my split lip. I don't know what has happened. I don't know where my husband is, or if he will come back, or whether I want him to. But I need him to. Without him, I can't live. I am scared. I want to see Claire. I stop reading and my hand goes to my forehead. It feels tender. The bruise I saw this morning, the one I covered up with makeup. Ben had hit me. I look back at the date. Friday, 23rd of November. It was 1 week ago. 1 week spent believing that everything is all right. I stand up to look in the mirror. It is still there. A faint blue contusion. Proof that what I wrote was true. I wonder what lies I have been telling myself to explain my injury, or what lies he has been telling me. But now I know the truth. I look at the pages in my hand and it hits me. He wanted me to find them. He knows that even if I read them today, I will have forgotten them tomorrow. Suddenly I hear him on the stairs, and almost for the first time, realize fully that I am here, in this hotel room, with Ben, with the man who has hit me. I hear his key in the lock. I have to know what happened, so I push the pages under the pillow and lie on the bed. As he comes into the room, I close my eyes. "Are you okay, darling?" he says. "Are you awake?" I open my eyes. He is standing in the doorway, clutching a bottle. "I could only get Carver," he says. "Okay." He puts the bottle on the dresser and kisses me. "I think I'll take a shower," he whispers. He goes into the bathroom and turns on the taps. When he has closed the door, I pull out the pages. I don't have long. Surely he will not be more than 5 minutes. And so I must read as quickly as I can. My eyes flick down the page, not even registering all the words, but seeing enough. That was hours ago. I have been sitting in the darkened hallway of our empty house, a slip of paper in one hand, a telephone in the other, ink on paper, a number smudged. There was no answer, just an endless ringing. I wonder if she has turned off her answering machine, or if the tape is full. I try again, and again. I have been here before. My time is circular. Claire is not there to help me. I looked in my bag and found the phone that Dr. Nash had given me. It is late, I thought. He won't be at work. He'll be with his girlfriend, doing whatever it is that the two of them do during their evenings, whatever two normal people do. I have no idea what that is. His home number was written in the front of my journal. It rang and rang, and then was silent. There was no recorded voice to tell me there was an error, no invitation to leave a message. I tried again. The same. His office number was now the only one I had. I sat there for a while, helpless, looking at the front door, half hoping to see Ben's shadowy figure appear in the frosted glass and insert a key in the lock, half fearing it. Eventually I could wait no more. I went upstairs and got undressed, and then I got into bed and wrote this. The house is still empty. In a moment I will close this book and hide it, and then switch off the light and sleep. And then I will forget, and this journal will be all that is left. I look at the next page with dread, fearing I will find it blank. But it is not. Monday, 26th of November. He hit me on Friday. 2 days, and I have written nothing. For all that time, did I believe things were all right? My face is bruised and sore. Surely I knew that something was not right. Today he said that I fell. The biggest cliché in the book, and I believed him. Why wouldn't I? He'd already had to explain who I was, and who he was, and how I'd come to be waking up in a strange house, decades older than I thought I should be. So why would I question his reason for my bruised and swollen eye, my cut lip? And so I went ahead with my day. I kissed him as he left for work. I cleared up our breakfast things. I ran a bath. And then I came in here, found this journal, and learnt the truth. A gap. I realize I have not mentioned Dr. Nash. Had he abandoned me? Had I found the journal without his help? Or had I stopped hiding it? I read on. Later, I called Claire. The phone that Ben had given me didn't work. The battery was probably dead, I thought. And so I used the one that Dr. Nash had given me. There was no answer, and so I sat in the living room. I could not relax. I picked up magazines, put them down again. I put the TV on and spent half an hour staring at the screen, not even noticing what was on. I looked at my journal, unable to concentrate, unable to write. I tried her again, several times, each time hearing the same message, inviting me to leave one of my own. It was just after lunchtime when she answered. "Chrissy," she said, "how are you?" I could hear Toby in the background playing. "I'm okay," I said, although I wasn't. "I was going to call you," she said. "I feel like hell, and it's only Monday." Monday. Days meant nothing to me. Each melted away, indistinguishable from the one that had preceded it. "I need to see you," I said. "Can you come over?" She sounded surprised. "To your place?" "Yes," I said. "Please, I want to talk to you. Is everything okay, Chrissy? You read the letter?" I took a deep breath, and my voice dropped to a whisper. "Ben hit me." I heard a gasp of surprise. "What?" "The other night. I'm bruised. He told me I'd fallen, but I wrote down that he hit me." "Chrissy, there is no way Ben would hit you, ever. He just isn't capable of it." Doubt flooded me. Was it possible I'd made it all up? "But I wrote it in my journal," I said. She said nothing for a moment. And then, "But why do you think he hit you?" I put my hands to my face, felt the swollen flesh around my eyes. I felt a flash of anger. It was clear she didn't believe me. I thought back to what I had written. I told him that I'd been keeping a journal. I said I'd been seeing you and Dr. Nash. I told him I knew about Adam. I told him you'd given me the letter he'd written, that I'd read it, and then he hit me. "He just hit you?" I thought of all the things he'd called me. The things he'd accused me of. "He said I was a bitch." I felt a sob rise in my chest. He accused me of sleeping with Dr. Nash. I said I wasn't. Then he hit me. A silence. Then Claire said,
Has he ever hit you before?
I had no way of knowing. Perhaps he had.
It was possible that ours had always been an abusive relationship. My mind flashed on Claire and me, marching, holding homemade placards, women's rights, no to domestic violence. I remembered how I had always looked down on women who found themselves with husbands who beat them and stayed put. They were weak, I thought, weak and stupid. Was it possible that I had fallen into the same trap as they had?
I don't know, I said.
It's difficult to imagine Ben hurting anything, but I suppose it's not impossible. Christ! He used to make even me feel guilty, do you remember?
No, I said. I don't remember anything.
Shit, she said, I'm sorry, I forgot. It's just so hard to imagine. He's the one who convinced me that fish have as much right to live as an animal with legs. He wouldn't even kill a spider. The wind gusts the curtains of the room. I hear a train in the distance. Screams from the pier. Downstairs, in the street, someone shouts, "Fuck!" and I hear the sound of breaking glass. I do not want to read on, but know that I must.
I felt a chill. Ben was vegetarian?
Vegan, she said, laughing. Don't tell me you didn't know.
I thought of the night he'd hit me. A lump of meat, I'd written. Peas floating in thin gravy. I went over to the window. Ben eats meat, I said, speaking slowly. He's not vegetarian. Not now, anyway. Maybe he's changed.
There was another long silence.
Claire? She said nothing. Claire, are you there?
Right, she said. She sounded angry now. I'm ringing him. I'm sorting this out. Where is he?
I answered without thinking. He'll be at the school, I suppose. He said he wouldn't be back until 5 o'clock.
At the school, she said. Do you mean the university? Is he lecturing now?
Fear began to stir within me. No, I said. He works at a school near here. I can't remember the name.
What does he do there?
A teacher. He's head of chemistry, I think he said.
I felt guilty at not knowing what my husband does for a living, not being able to remember how he earns the money to keep us fed and clothed.
I don't remember. I looked up and caught sight of my swollen face reflected in the window in front of me. The guilt evaporated.
What school? She asked.
I don't know, I said. I don't think he told me.
What? Never?
Not this morning, no, I said.
For me, that might as well be never.
I'm sorry, Chrissy, I didn't mean to upset you. It's just that, well, I sensed a change of mind. A sentence aborted.
Could you find out the name of the school?
I thought of the office upstairs.
I guess so. Why? I'd like to speak to Ben, to make sure he'll be coming home when I'm there this afternoon. I wouldn't want it to be a wasted journey.
I noticed the humour she was trying to inject into her voice, but didn't mention it. I felt out of control, couldn't work out what was best, what I should do, and so decided to surrender to my friend.
I'll have a look, I said.
I went upstairs. The office was tidy, piles of papers arranged across the desk. It did not take long to find some headed paper, a letter about a parents' evening that had already taken place.
It's St. Anne's, I said. You want the number?
She said she'd find it out herself.
I'll call you back, she said. Yes?
Panic hit again. What are you going to say to him? I said.
I'm going to sort this out, she said. Trust me, Chrissy. There has to be an explanation, okay?
Yes, I said, and ended the call. I sat down, my legs shaking. What if my first hunch had been correct? What if Claire and Ben were still sleeping together?
Maybe she was calling him now, warning him.
She suspects, she might be saying. Be careful. I remembered reading my journal earlier. Dr. Nash had told me that I had once shown symptoms of paranoia, claiming the doctors were conspiring against you, he'd said. A tendency to confabulate, to invent things. What if that's all happening again? What if I am inventing this? All of it. Everything in my journal might be fantasy. Paranoia. I thought of what they told me in the ward, and Ben in his letter. You were occasionally violent. I realized it might have been me who caused the fight on Friday night. Did I lash out at Ben? Perhaps he hit back, and then, upstairs in the bathroom, I took a pen and explained it all away with a fiction. What if all this journal means is that I'm getting worse again? That soon it really will be time for me to go back to Waring House? I went cold, suddenly convinced that this was why Dr. Nash had wanted to take me there, to prepare me for my return. All I can do is wait for Claire to call me back. Another gap. Is that what's happening now? Will Ben try to take me back to Waring House? I look over to the bathroom door. I will not let him. There is only one final entry, written later that same day. Monday, 26th of November, 6:55 p.m. Claire called me after less than half an hour, and now my mind oscillates. It swings from one thing to the other, then back again. I know what to do. I don't know what to do. I know what to do. But there's a third thought. I shudder as I realize the truth. I am in danger. I turn to the front of this journal, intending to write "Don't trust Ben," but I find those words are already there. I don't remember writing them, but then I don't remember anything. A gap, and then it continues. She sounded hesitant on the phone. "Chrissy," she said, "listen." Her tone frightened me. I sat down. "What?" "I called Ben. At school." I had the overwhelming sensation of being on an uncontrollable journey, of being in unnavigable waters.
"What did he say?"
I didn't speak to him. I just wanted to make sure he worked there.
"Why?" I said. "Don't you trust him?"
"He's lied about other things." I had to agree. "But why did you think he'd tell me he worked somewhere if he didn't?" I said. "I was just surprised he was working in a school. You know, he trained to be an architect. The last time I spoke to him, he was looking into setting up his own practice. I just thought it was a bit odd he should be working in a school."
"What did they say?"
"They said they couldn't disturb him. He was busy in a class." I felt relief. He hadn't lied about that, at least. "He must have changed his mind," I said, "about his career. Chrissy, I told him I wanted to send him some documents, a letter. I asked for his official title.
And?"
I said. "He's not head of chemistry. Or science. Or anything else. They said he was a lab assistant." I felt my body jerk. I may have gasped. I don't remember.
"Are you sure?"
I said. My mind raced to think of a reason for this new lie. Was it possible he was embarrassed? Worried about what I would think if I knew he had gone from being a successful architect to a lab assistant in a local school. Did he really think I was so shallow that I would love him any more or less based on what he did for a living? Everything made sense.
"Oh, God," I said, "it's my fault."
"No," she said, "it's not your fault."
"It is," I said, "it's the strain of having to look after me, of having to deal with me, day in and day out. He must be having a breakdown. Maybe he doesn't even know himself what's true and what's not." I began to cry. "It must be unbearable," I said. "He even has to go through all that grief on his own, every day."
The line was silent. And then Claire said,
"Grief?
What grief?"
"Adam," I said. I felt pain at having to say his name.
"What about Adam?" It came to me, wild, unbidden. "Oh, God," I thought, "she doesn't know. Ben hasn't told her."
"He's dead," I said.
She gasped.
"Dead? When? How?"
"I don't know when exactly," I said. "I think Ben told me it was last year. He was killed in the war."
"War? What war?"
"Afghanistan." And then she said it.
"Chrissy? What would he be doing in Afghanistan?"
Her voice was strange. She almost sounded pleased. "He was in the army," I said. But even as I spoke, I was starting to doubt what I was saying, as if I was finally facing something I had known all along. I heard Claire snort, almost as if she was finding something amusing.
"Chrissy," she said, "Chrissy, darling, Adam hasn't been in the army. He's never been to Afghanistan. He's living in Birmingham with someone called Helen. He works with computers. He hasn't forgiven me, but I still ring him occasionally. He'd probably rather I didn't, but I am his godmother, remember?"
It took me a moment to work out why she was still using the present tense. And even as I did so, she said it.
I rang him after we met last week, she said. She was almost laughing now. He wasn't there, but I spoke to Helen. She said she'd ask him to ring me back. Adam is alive.
I stop reading. I feel light, empty. I feel I might fall backwards, or else float away. Dare I believe it? Do I want to? I steady myself against the dresser and read on, only dimly aware that no longer do I hear the sound of Ben's shower. I must have stumbled, grabbed hold of the chair. He's alive. My stomach rolled. I remember vomit rising in my throat and having to swallow it down. He's really alive. Yes, she said. Yes.
But, I began, but I saw a newspaper, a clipping. It said he'd been killed.
It can't have been real, Chrissy, she said. It can't have been. He's alive. I began to speak, but then everything hit me at once. Every emotion bound up in every other.
Joy. I remember joy. The sheer pleasure of knowing that Adam is alive fizzed on my tongue. But mixed into it was the bitter, acid tang of fear. I thought of my bruises, of the force with which Ben must have struck me to cause them. Perhaps his abuse is not only physical. Perhaps some days he takes delight in telling me that my son is dead, so that he can see the pain that thought inflicts. Was it really possible that on other days, in which I remember the fact of my pregnancy, or giving birth to my baby, he simply tells me that Adam has moved away, is working abroad, living on the other side of town? And if so, why did I never write down any of those alternative truths that he fed me? Images entered my head, of Adam as he might be now, fragments of scenes I may have missed, but none would hold. Each image slid through me and then vanished. The only thing I could think was, he's alive, alive, my son is alive. I can meet him. Where is he? I said, where is he? I want to see him.
Chrissy, Claire said, stay calm.
But, Chrissy, she interrupted, I'm coming round. Stay there. Claire, tell me where he is.
I'm really worried about you, Chrissy, please.
But, she raised her voice, Chrissy, calm down, she said.
And then a single thought pierced through the fog of my confusion.
I am hysterical. I took a breath and tried to settle, as Claire began to speak again.
Adam is living in Birmingham, she said.
But he must know where I am now, I said. Why doesn't he come to see me?
Chrissy, she began,
why? Why doesn't he visit me? Does he not get on with Ben? Is that why he stays away?
Chrissy, she said, her voice soft, Birmingham is a fair way away. He has a busy life.
You mean, maybe he can't get down to London that often? But,
Chrissy, you think Adam doesn't visit?
But I can't believe that. Maybe he does come, when he can.
I fell silent. Nothing made sense. Yet she was right. I have only been keeping my journal for a couple of weeks. Before that, anything could have happened.
I need to see him, I said. I want to see him. Do you think that can be arranged?
I don't see why not. But if Ben is really telling you that he's dead, then we ought to speak to him first.
Of course, I thought. But what will he say? He thinks that I still believe his lies.
He'll be here soon, I said. Will you still come over? Will you help me to sort this out?
Of course, she said. Of course. I don't know what's going on, but we'll talk to Ben. I promise. I'll come now.
Now? Right now?
Yes, I'm worried, Chrissy. Something's not right. Her tone bothered me, but at the same time I felt relieved and excited at the thought that I might soon be able to meet my son. I wanted to see him, to see his photograph, right away. I remembered that we had hardly any, and those we did have were locked away. A thought began to form.
Claire, I said, did we have a fire?
She sounded confused.
A fire?
Yes. We have hardly any photographs of Adam, and almost none of our wedding. Ben said we lost them in a fire.
A fire? She said, what fire?
Ben said there was a fire in our old home. We lost lots of things.
When?
I don't know. Years ago.
And you have no photographs of Adam?
I felt myself getting annoyed. We have some, but not many. Hardly any of him, other than when he was a baby. A toddler. And none of holidays, not even our honeymoon. None of Christmases, nothing like that.
Chrissy, she said, her voice was quiet, measured. I thought I detected something in it, some new emotion. Fear. Describe Ben to me.
What?
Describe him to me. Ben. What does he look like?
What about the fire? I said, tell me about that.
There was no fire, she said.
But I wrote down that I remembered it, I said.
A chip pan. The phone rang. You must have been imagining it, she said, but I sensed her anxiety.
Chrissy, there was no fire. Not years ago. Ben would have told me. Now, describe Ben. What does he look like? Is he tall?
Not particularly.
Black hair? My mind went blank. Yes. No, I don't know. He's beginning to go grey. He has a paunch, I think. Maybe not.
I stood up.
I need to see his photograph.
I went back upstairs. They were there, pinned around the mirror, me and my husband, happy, together.
His hair looks kind of brown, I said. I heard a car pull up outside the house.
You're sure?
Yes, I said. The engine was switched off. The door slammed. A loud beep. I lowered my voice. I think Ben's home.
Shit, said Claire. Quick. Does he have a scar?
A scar? I said, where?
On his face, Chrissy, a scar across one cheek. He had an accident, rock climbing.
I scanned the photographs, choosing the one of me and my husband sitting at a breakfast table in our dressing gowns. In it he was smiling happily, and, apart from a hint of stubble, his cheeks were unblemished. Fear rushed to hit me. I heard the front door open. A voice.
Christine! Darling! I'm home!
No, I said. No, he doesn't. A sound. Somewhere between a gasp and a sigh.
The man you're living with, Claire said.
I don't know who it is, but it's not Ben. Terror hits. I hear the toilet flush, but can do nothing but read on.
I don't know what happened then. I can't piece it together. Claire began talking, almost shouting.
Fuck, she said over and over. My mind was spinning with panic. I heard the front door shut, the click of the lock.
I'm in the bathroom,
I shouted to the man I had thought was my husband. My voice sounded cracked, desperate.
I'll be down in a minute.
I'll come round, said Claire. I'm getting you out of there.
Everything okay, darling?
Shouted the man who is not Ben. I heard his footsteps on the stairs and realized I had not locked the bathroom door. I lowered my voice.
He's here, I said.
Come tomorrow, while he's at work. I'll pack my things. I'll call you.
Shit, she said.
Okay, but write in your journal. Write in it as soon as you can. Don't forget. I thought of my journal, hidden in the wardrobe. I must stay calm, I thought. I must pretend nothing is wrong, at least until I get to it and write down the danger I am in.
Help me, I said. Help me.
I ended the call as he pushed open the bathroom door. It ends there. Frantic, I found through the last few pages, but they are blank, scored only with their faint blue lines. Waiting for the rest of my story. But there is no more. Ben had found the journal, removed the pages, and Claire had not come for me. When Dr. Nash collected the journal, on Tuesday the 27th it must have been, I had not known anything was wrong. In a single rush I see it all. Realize why the board in the kitchen so disturbed me. The handwriting, its neat, even capitals, looked totally different from the scrawl of the letter Claire had given me. Somewhere, deep down, I had known then that they were not written by the same person. I look up. Ben, or the man pretending to be Ben, has come out of the shower. He is standing in the doorway, dressed as he was before, looking at me. I don't know how long he has been there. Watching me read. His eyes hold nothing more than a sort of vacancy, as if he is barely interested in what he is seeing, as if it doesn't concern him. I hear myself gasp. I drop the papers. Unbound, they slide onto the floor.
You, I say. Who are you?
He says nothing. He's looking at the papers in front of me.
Answer me,
I say, my voice has an authority to it. But one that I do not feel.
My mind reels as I try to work out who he could be. Someone from Waring House, perhaps. A patient. Nothing makes any sense. I feel the stirrings of panic as another thought begins to form and then vanishes. He looks up at me then. "I'm Ben," he says. He speaks slowly as if trying to make me understand the obvious. "Ben, your husband." I move back along the floor, away from him, as I fight to remember what I've read, what I know. "No," I say, and then again louder. "No!" He moves forward. "I am, Christine. You know I am." Fear takes me. Terror. It lifts me up, holds me suspended, and then slams me back into its own horror. Claire's words come back to me. "But it's not Ben." A strange thing happens then. I realize I am not remembering reading about her saying those words. I am remembering the incident itself. I can remember the panic in her voice. The way she said, "Fuck," before telling me what she'd realized, and repeated the words, "It's not Ben." I am remembering. "You're not," I say, "you're not Ben. Claire told me. Who are you?" "Remember the pictures, though, Christine? The ones from around the bathroom mirror? Look, I brought them to show you." He takes a step towards me and then reaches for his bag on the floor beside the bed. He picks out a few curled photographs. "Look," he says. And when I shake my head, he takes the first one and, glancing at it, holds it up to me. "This is us," he says. "Look, me and you." The photograph shows us sitting on some sort of boat, on a river or canal. Behind us there is dark, muddy water, with unfocused reeds beyond that. We both look young, our skin taut where now it sags, our eyes unlined and wide with happiness. "Don't you see?" he says. "Look!"